So why do we have this topic, message of Mahavir? A few reasons, first of all. Firstly, Mahavir Jayanti is around the corner. So we have to honor the great Tirthankara. And secondly, the second object of the Theosophical movement is a comparative study of all religions, especially the Oriental ones, and cull out the truths which are present in any of these religions. So in order to fulfill that purpose, we have to engage in this discussion. Thirdly, the teacher says, HPB says that it was the Jain teachers, who were the original teachers of Lord Buddha. In fact, Mahavira is shown as a contemporary of Lord Buddha, and Lord Buddha himself was trained, taught by the great Jainas. Fourth and important information we gather from the occult history mentioned in Isis Unveiled is that Jainas are the descendants of the original inhabitants of India. So their philosophy must be something which must be read and understood by especially those Indians, those of us who are Indians. Now, a few disclaimers as usual. Students, we are all students, not scholars or great academicians. So our understanding is limited to the study that we have been able to do. Secondly, we are not even scratching the surface of the philosophy that we have taken for consideration. We are only looking at the surface from a distance. We are not even scratching the surface. And further, what our focus will be is the soul aspect of the Jina Dharma, Jaina Dharma, and not its bodily aspect. The bodily aspect referring to the various practices, the various changes, the various historical, sectarian differences that are there between Digambaras and Shvetambaras and so on. That's not what we are concerned about. And further, our focus will be not merely on mentioning the ethics of the Jainas, but try to understand what is the science behind the ethics. The ethics of the Jainas are quite evident. It is the ethics of all the religions, especially found in the Yama aspect of yoga, for example, Patanjali. Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Aparigraha, Brahmacharya, right? That constitutes Samyak Charitra, or the best conduct for all human beings. But what is the science behind it, right? How do they arrive at this as the supreme work that an individual has to undertake? How do they arrive at this? The science behind that is what we will try to understand. Further disclaimers, two more are, you see, the whole Jain corpus is in a Prakrit tradition, right? It is not in Sanskrit, and it was only later when other sects and religions began their religious and philosophical assault on Jain philosophy that Jainas began to develop a corpus in Sanskrit. Right? The original Jaina tradition has been in Prakrit. And since this student knows neither Prakrit nor Sanskrit, right? The pronunciation and when we spell out the verses, there will be many mistakes in Prakrit pronunciation. But still we have to consider those Prakrit verses because they are so beautiful, right? Indian languages, so they add the certain color and certain, they take our mind to certain places which English cannot do, right? So we have to consider Prakrit, but the bad Prakrit pronunciation will be there. And the final disclaimer is, when a scripture is being prepared by a great sage, right? It has to have certain sulakshanas, right? For example, Bhagavad Gita or Bhashya of Shankara has to have certain sulakshanas. And one of them is that a text should not have punarupta dosha, that is, repetition in itself. There should be no one thing mentioned in Gita which is repeated elsewhere. If we feel that there is a repetition in Bhagavad Gita, it is just because we are not understanding the true import of the context in which the verse has been placed, which we feel is a repetition, right? But since this talk is by an ordinary student like all of us, there will be punarukta dosha, which means there will be repetitions many times of the same idea. So we have to be aware of this, and in the true spirit of Jaina forgiveness, all these things also have to be forgiven, right? So that having said, disclaimers, we have to start with the Tirthankaras, the Arhats or Arihants or the Jinas. Who are they and why should we begin with them? Just like Judge begins his Ocean of Theosophy with a chapter on the masters. Similarly, study of the philosophy of Jainas have to begin with Jainas or Jinas or Arhants. Jina means a conqueror. Arihant also means more or less the same, I suppose. I don't know. I could not find the etymology. Arhat, Arihant. Tirthankara is interesting. Tirtha is a
clear of evidence.
Arihanta. So, and Tirthankara is a ford maker. That is, there is an ocean or something to be crossed, and a ford, a sort of a bridge has to be built, and one who makes that ford so that others can follow that path and reach that other shore, he is Tirthankara, right? And their place in human history is the highest homage and reverence is to be paid to Tirthankaras, right? What the Jain philosophy says is that human evolution happens through cycles. It is neither linear nor is it random. It happens through cycles. They call it the downward cycle is Avasarpani, Avasarpini. Upward cycle is called Utsarpini. Utsarpinis and Avasarpini, the cycle keeps on rolling, and in this roll of the wheel, humans evolve, right? All beings evolve in this. Look at Avasarpini. It has six, what shall we say, six clearly defined phases. The downward path, the downward arch of the cycle has six aspects. Not aspects, what shall we say? Six stages. First is where human beings are great height, they say. They were of great height, many miles high. They used to live for ages upon ages. And there was no concept of marriage. When the time for procreation would come, twins would be born. Reference to hermaphrodite races, right? Then they would unite and twins would be born. And there was no need for food at all. It seems there was a kalpavriksha, a wish-granting tree which would give and cater to all the physical, mental, emotional, psychic, spiritual needs of the people. Granted. This phase, golden phase, is called Sukham Sukham. Then came the next stage where there is only Sukham. Then came the third stage where it is Sukham Dukham. Then came Dukham Sukham. Now we are in the fifth stage called as Dukham. There is no Sukha. The sixth stage is yet to come. If we are tired of this kind of society, life and our condition, the next stage, which is Dukkam Dukkam, is yet to come. So be ready for that. Yet there is not the slightest feeling of discouragement in Jain philosophy because of their analysis of human power and where they place human being as, which we will see as a core in the course of the talk, right? So in these six stages of downward cycle, there are 24 Tirthankaras. First one being Rishabhanatha, Rishabhadeva, who is seen as, who is said to be the founder of Ikshvaku dynasty. Rishabha, right? And the 24th, who was a contemporary of Lord Buddha, is Mahavira. But is Rishabhanatha the first of the Tirthankaras? Jaina says no. The infinite number of Tirthankaras. He is only the first in this downward cycle. In the previous upward and downward cycle, there were 24 plus 24 other Tirthankaras. Previous to that, 24 plus 24, and so on and so forth. And these 24 themselves are interesting. They are not the whole and soul of human, they are not the most, what shall we say, powerful individuals who make a mark upon human history. They are a subset of 63 bigger set. There are 63 Purushas called Shalaka Purushas. Shalaka means a stick used for voting. So it's a very significant stick. So by naming these 63 persons as Shalaka Purushas, the idea being conveyed is that they are so important, just like casting, they are the people who cast a vote upon the whole of the human history, whole of the human evolution. Of the 63, 24 are Tirthankaras, 12 are Chakravartins, divine dynasties, 9 are Baladevas or Balabhadras or Balaramas, as we study in Mahabharata. That is, they're great personages, but gentle and do not engage in warfare. Right? And with 9 are born their brothers or twins called 9 Vasudevas or 9 Narayanas, who are equally heroic yet engage in warfare. And as there are 9 Vasudevas or 9 Narayanas, there are 9 Prativasudevas or Pratinarayanas who are the anti-heroes. It is this 63 individuals who are representative of what happens in the human history. I mean, they make such a mark upon human evolution. That's what the Jainas say. And Rishabhadeva, the first Tirthankara, he is the one who brought civilization into existence, according to Jainas. What do we mean by that? That is, he was the one who taught 76 arts to humanity. Humanity did not have arts and science and sociology and political science. He taught them 76 arts, categorized into 6 categories. Asi, which is warfare, weapon making, and defense, offense, and so on. Masi, which is the art of writing, publication, writing, letters, and so on. Krushi, which is agriculture, livestock rearing, and so on. And then there is Vidya, which is knowledge of all kinds related to the world, organization of the society, politics, and so on. Vanijya, commerce. And finally, Shilpa, which is all kinds of construction, architecture, and all the things which comes under Shilpa. By imparting this great knowledge to humanity of the third phase, third stage, which is, as we saw, is the stage of Sukham Dukham, that he inaugurated human life, inaugurated societal life. There was no marriage before that. He instituted marriage. There was no caste before that. He instituted 3 castes, not 4. Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Not the 4. Brahmins were not there, right? And the fourth dharma, Varna. The fourth Varna was added by son of Bharata, who was a Chakravartin and not a Tirthankara, right? So we call India Bharatavarsha because Bharata was such a great king. And he added the fourth Varna, which is the Brahmin Varna. This is the history that Jainas have. Fourth Varna, Brahmin, was added by Bharata. Earlier to that, Rishabha only instituted three: Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Right? So there is the story of Bharata, who, you know, extraordinary king, extraordinary warrior, extraordinary capacity. He conquers everything and highly righteous, no unlawful warfare. And he is so satisfied of himself as the great Chakravarti. He goes to the base of Mount Meru to carve his name, King Bharata. And he goes there and finds there is no place for him to carve anything. Because there are so many such people, Chakravartins, who have come and gone. He cannot find an inch of place to etch his name. Then he becomes humble. You see, millions have come before me, millions will come after me. Who am I? So he develops Vairagya at the end stage, right? So that is about Rishabhanatha and his son Bharata. And interestingly, all the Tirthankaras, 24, most of them have Natha, Natha, Natha as their appendage to their name. Shantinatha, Parshvanatha, Neminatha, Rishabhanatha, and so on. Probably reference to the Nath tradition, right, that we read about in the Secret Doctrine. And the 24th was pertaining to the triangle, the spiritual fires. 24th Tirthankara was actually named as Vardhaman, and he was given the honorific of Mahavira, because as one Prakrit shloka says, assume there are 10 lakh highly trained warriors and you single-handedly engage with them in warfare simultaneously. It's an invincible war, but you still vanquish all of them. Such a person deserves no merit in comparison to one who has conquered his own self. Since Mahavira did that, since Vardhamana did that, he has become Mahavira, great warrior, the great one who conquered, right? Now, this Tirthankara, when we speak of, we have to make a distinction which generally is missed out in amongst Jains, but is very evident if you even scratch the surface of Jain literature. There are two kinds of Kevala Jnanis spoken of by Jainism. Kevala Jnani means, Kevala Jnana is a supreme wisdom, omniscience. Kevala means alone. That is the knowledge which alone is real, or knowledge of the only reality, or the only knowledge which is true. You can look at it anyway, but it is omniscience, right? But not all people who reach Kevala Jnana are Tirthankaras, right? They make a distinction between Samanya Kevalin, Tirthankara Kevalin. Samanya Kevalin is one who attains to omniscience but becomes bodiless, Dharmakaya, becomes bodiless, reaches the summit of what they call as Lokakasha, summit of manifested universe, unconcerned about anything, he becomes a Siddha. In the Jain literature, is called a Siddha. Tirthankara Kevalin is not that. Tirthankara Kevalin remains in a body that he has made for himself called Paramaudharika Sharira. We have different kinds of bodies that Jains speak of. But Tirthankara has made a most holy body, Nirmanakaya Sharira, which they call as Paramaudharika Sharira, resides in it and works for humanity. Therefore, in the Jain tradition, the most holy mantra that mantra which has remained the same across millenniums, that mantra which all sects of Shvetambaras and Digambaras accept without any controversy, is called Namokara mantra, Navakara mantra, or Pancha Parameshti mantra. In that mantra, where five teachers are shown reverence in descending order, the first stage, the first highest rank is given to Tirthankara. They call Namo Tirthankaranam. Second comes Namo Siddhanam. One who has attained to Siddha Loka, Siddha Shila, lower than a Tirthankara. Very clear. Then comes Acharya, Upadhyaya, and Sadhunam. But in the hierarchy, it is not those who go to Siddha Shila Loka who are supreme, but a Tirthankara who remains in the body. Very interesting. Very interesting. So the teachings about the masters that we read in Theosophy is very patent thing. And so that is about the Tirthankaras. Now the study of their tattvas, their philosophy, which they transmit from one to another, is called as Jina Dharma, right? The Dharma of the conquerors, the great conquerors of themselves, right? And it all is summarized just like in yoga aphorisms we find a one small terse axiom which will have you can write 10 volumes and still not finish. Like that, there is their axiomatic central book called as Tattvartha Sutra by Umaswati or Umaswami. There, this is one small shloka which sums up the whole human existence, whole human evolution, end all and be all, and it is this: Jiva Jiva Ashrava Bandha Samvara Nirjara Moksha. Jiva, Ajiva, Ashrava, Bandha, Samvara, Nirjara, Moksha. There is Jiva and there is Ajiva. There is Ashrava, which means influx, inflow into the Jiva of Ajiva. That leads to Bandha. Then you can stop that. You have the power to do that. That is Samvara. You stop that inflow. But what has already been accumulated, you do an outflow, Nirjara, that is Mukti, Moksha. One verse, whole philosophy, right? The attention to be paid here too is of the nature of Jiva. Now Jiva is essentially Chetana and Jnana, or Darshana and Jnana. Mahavira makes a very, he gives this Prakrit shloka. We have to read that. And it says this: Ego me sasavo appa. Appa means Atma. In Prakrit, Atma. Ego me sasavo appa. Nana damsana. Nana, which means Nana. Nana damsana darshana sanjuo. That is, myself alone is, that self alone is eternal. It is of the nature of Jnana and Darshana. Sesa me bahira bhava. Everything else other than that, which is functionally part of myself, is transient and doesn't exist. The nature of Jiva is the beginning point of all philosophy, right? No, so essentially it is Darshana and Jnana. But what is it functionally? Functionally it has three Upayogas. Yoga here means not yoga as we understand. Yoga means action in Jain philosophy. Upayoga means categories of action. It has three categories of action. Functionally, soul can act on the plane of mind, act on the plane of speech, act on the plane of body. So it has Darshana, Jnana, and Upayoga, right? If darshana becomes wonky or wrong or obscure, then your jnana becomes distorted. If jnana becomes distorted, all that you think, speak and do is wrong, sinful. When you do sinful act, you get bound by it and you have a most miserable life. So begin with darshana. Correct your jnana. Have samyak charitra, which refers to your mind, speech and body. That's all there is. That's all there is. So in the Jain symbol, wherever you see, you will find three dots mentioned. And then there is a higher dot. The three dots refer to this. Samyak darshana, samyak jnana, samyak charitra. That is the threefold, triratna of Jain philosophy. Right? And these three corresponds to what? The three aspects of the soul. The darshanaic aspect, jnanaic aspect, functional aspect. Right? And the difference between some darshana and jnana is very nicely mentioned somewhere deep in the commentary of one of the sutras. They say, darshana is general principle, jnana is particular application. So from general principles, you derive its particular application to any aspect of life that you take. Then that is jnana. Darshana is the very perspective that you have, the very framework with which you analyze life. Right? Unfortunately, very, very sadly, all the English translations that you take of this Prakrit work, most of the Prakrit work, translate Samyak Darshana as right faith, which is disastrous to their philosophy. It is not faith, it is the right view, right perspective, or right principles, you may say. Right? So how does jiva attract ajiva? How does bandha happen? Where does this bondage takes place? That's what we will consider for the next 5 to 10 minutes. Right? When soul acts, functionally it has to act because it has mind, it has speech, it has body. When it acts, again there is a category of shubha, ashubha, shuddha. Shuddha action on the plane of mind, speech and body, extremely rare. Extremely rare. You have to be a kevala jnanin to have a shuddha upayoga. All of us do shubha, ashubha, shubha, ashubha. Right, wrong, not right, wrong, auspicious, inauspicious, good and evil, good and evil. And as the great Kundakundacharya says, it is Suvarna Kampi, that is, your good actions also will bind you like a fetter made of pure gold, golden chains. Whether you are bound by iron chain or you are bound by golden chain, Punya and Papa both will bind you. Take knowledge so that you can perform Shuddha Kriya and become yourself, which is liberated, right? That seems to be the message of what is this inflow that they speak of, ashrava? How does this inflow happen? What is it that flows into the soul? They call it pudgala. Pudgala means pudgala. Integration, disintegration. Coming together, dissociation. That is, there is some karmic substance which can integrate and disintegrate, made of paramanus, highly subtle atomic substances, which in not even the modern atomic atom, that atom itself is consisted of billions of paramanus, karmic substances, and they all have intensity points, right? They may have intensity point of 1, intensity point of 5, intensity point of 10, and they are either dry or they are wet. If they are wet, they attract, become sticky. If they are dry, they repel and move away from one another. It's some kind of metachemistry that they are speaking of, and metaphysics, where they go into deep mathematical analysis of these intensity points and what kind of karmic substances, when they have this intensity point, can merge with karmic substances of other intensity points. What is the ratio with which they can greatest analysis that you can think of, they have completed it in terms of karmic analysis, right? So when the soul acts, because of Shubha and Ashubha, it attracts these sticky substances of various kinds to itself, and the soul gets colored. Lesha, coloring of the soul. Where is it all that, where is all these karmic substances stored? This body may go, astral body may go, they speak of astral body, the, or even the body that you use for projecting at a distance and, you know, Maya Vikrupa and all that. They speak of all those bodies. But the subtlest body they speak of is Karmana Sharira. That is, it is that substance which is right after the soul, which the soul carries in whatever state it is in life, after life, as a Deva, as a Tirthankara, whatever state he is in. It is there that these karmic substances called, especially your passionate nature called Kashaya. Kashaya means sticky substance, gets attached, and wherever you go, you carry your karma with you. In Devachan, you are carrying your karma. On life, you are carrying your karma. The circumstances of your life is a expression of interaction of your jiva, yourself, with the karmana sharira, and the effect it produces outwardly is your circumstances of life, your body, where you are born, your heredity, fortune and misfortune. You carry everything with you. Whole destiny is in you. Right? So that is the idea about pudgala, karmic substances. And is there a God who organizes these things, who creates jivas, who makes the world? No such God. No such God. In fact, there is a great writer, Ratna Prabhacharya. He asked his most fundamental question. If there is a God as we understand it, how do you explain the prosperity of the vicious and the misery of the virtuous, which is evident in the world? He says this, prosperity of the vicious, misery of the virtuous, how do you explain it? And Acharya Jinasena, in a lengthy passage, with pure application of common sense and reason, destroys the idea of God as we understand it. Right? Popular understanding of God who sits there, who controls things. And how, what logic he uses, convincing and most solid, you know, framework he builds for dismissing of the idea of God, right? But then why would they worship the Tirthankaras? They say that we don't worship Tirthankaras in the sense that others worship their gods, either monotheistic or polytheistic. We worship Tirthankara in the sense that when you pay obeisance, homage to something and put your mind on some elevated ideal, you begin to imbibe those qualities because of the quality of the mind. Therefore, you repeatedly bring to your mind the ideal of Tirthankara. In that way you worship. You are not asking for any favor. It's not that kind of worship that Tirthankaras expect, nor a true Jaina follows, right? And Manibhadra, another writer, he says this, let me have no bias against Kapila. When analyzing Sankhya, he said, let me have no bias against Kapila. Let me not favor the Mahavira. Let me only accept what is rationally true, what is according to reason, what explains, what is without belief, what can be demonstrated. Let me accept that only as true. Anta. The whole Jain philosophy is analysis, 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 categorization, subcategorization, classification, subclassification, barest thread analysis, and then linking that bare single thread to the whole of the philosophy. You know, that kind of synthetic and analytical. Universals to particulars, particulars to universals. This kind of engagement they take with deep, analytical mind that they take. Right? And then how do you explain? Okay, there is no God. How do you explain? They say that there is a self-regulatory moral order. Kamma. Karma. self-regulatory moral order. It is the regulatory action of that law that results in all these things. But this does not mean that I am under karma. No, they don't accept that. No niyati, no bhagya, not even karma, but purushartha. It is the power of myself, which they say purushartavada, is the cornerstone and the foundation of the working of karma. Vada. Purushartavada is the foundation and the cornerstone of the working of karma. As we say, there is no being, there is no karma unless there is a being to make it or feel its effect. So there is no karma, there is no being, no karma. And there is K-N-O-W, no being, then you K-N-O-W, no karma. Being, they have such great, they are very averse to any kind of extraneous force or influence upon jiva. Supreme power is jiva itself. Any concept that comes close to impinging upon the shadow of jiva's power, they are very allergic to it. Demolish it, destroy it.
So we are.
Demolish it and reassert the supremacy of the individual. Each jiva is supremely powerful. No other force is needed. No other power is needed. Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? And that is self-regulatory moral order, karma in one sense. Karma, they also see it in its application to particular individual as sum total of unfulfilled desires. Unfulfilled desires. That is, it is that aspect of individual karma which makes him take birth again and again. Why am I born here? Because you desire it. You have unfulfilled desires. To fulfill it, you have come here. You don't want this. Change the circumstance. You don't want this world. Choose better world. You don't want that world also. Choose something better. Who stops you? Karma, action, they say in Bhagavati Aradhana, a shloka comes which says, such is the might of the law of karma that it is like the mighty elephant, Airavata, which stamps upon all other powers in the universe, just as the mighty elephant can trample upon a clump of lotus. All powers, everything is open to you. You know what kind of pleasures you can have? All that you desire. Expand your imagination. Everything that you want, assume you have got it, right? Now, assume all that everybody else wants. What will be their imagination? Assume you have got all that also. That pleasure and that, you know, power and satisfaction is, compared to the powers and pleasures that you can have in the other lokas, is, in comparison to that, like the dewdrop on the kusa grass compared to the sagara. What petty things, power of the soul is so much you can want and get anything what you want. Who stops you? So that's the power of the soul that they recognize. And this law of karma, right, very central to their ethics and life and everything that they look at, right? Tirthankara himself, right? He could not escape karma. The great Mahavira, at the cusp of his liberation, at the cusp of becoming Tirthankara, right? Just a few days are there before he can become Tirthankara. He is visited by his long past karma, where because of that demerit, he was spat upon. People throw feces on him. People poke him with sharp objects. People push him, throw him in the air and make him fall down. Abuse him verbally, torture him physically. But he patiently goes through it without any disturbance in the mind. forgiving everybody, remembering that they are all myself. Because he conquered, he became Mahavira, right? So the idea here is even Tirthankara at that stage, just before becoming Tirthankara, could not escape karma with his great powers, because karma is supreme. Karma is supreme, right? And the duration in which the karma matures, right? They say it can happen less than a muhurta. A muhurta is 2 minutes to 45 minutes. 43 minutes. You do something or you think something, its effect may be within a muhurta or even the very next instance, or it may bear fruit when 7 into 10 to the power of 255 years later, it will remain. It will remain without losing its intensity. It has its prakriti, that is the kind of karma it is, good, bad, partial good, partial bad, helpful to others, harmful to oneself, whatever that may be, prakriti, it has its sthiti, intensity, not intensity, the duration in which it has to, the duration for which it has to express itself to expend, it has its pradesha. Does it work in the body? Does it work on the mind? Does it work on some other plane? Specific pradesha. And it has its anubhava, intensity with which it has to work. What great analysis they have done of karma. With the understanding that we get from theosophy, crucial information that we get from theosophy. If we read Jain philosophy, it's very, find it very pure theosophy. Explaining them. And look at how further they go. They say that and the Jaina metaphysician is deeply concerned about action, because it is his own action that on which rests the whole cosmos, right? He analyzes it painstaking details, right? Look at me. Another example I will give, and this is all not even scratching the surface to tell you, right? He says, you know, what does action contain? We just think, oh, I thought, I spoke, I did something. The three karanas is all that we know. He says, no. Firstly, there is motive. Innumerable motives you can have. Each of them have specific action on you, a specific reaction upon you, right? A specific intensity, specific pradesha, and specific anubhava. That is of the motive. But motive is not everything. There is a process of action, which is threefold again. Intention to act, preparation of action, commencement of action. We think action is just acting. No, he says, your intention to act has a karmic, you know, merit or demerit. You may intend and prepare to act, like drafting a police complaint. There is a certain thing attached to it. And then actual submission of police complaint, that is another. So the three subtleties that they look at: intention to act, preparation of action, action, commencement of action. Now, process is not everything again. There is instrument, which is intention to act on the mind, intention to speak, intention to commit bodily act, right? So the process as a matrix towards the instrument of action. But it doesn't end there for Jaina. He says, this is not all. There is modality of action wherein you do something. That's one thing. You cause others to do it. You sow an act wherein his intention to act or intention to speak is influenced. Then you are responsible. Or you approve of somebody doing something. Yoga for himself. If you look at this matrix of motive, process, instrumentality, modality, there are 108 ways in which you can get bound. 108 broad ways, innumerable smaller ways, sub ways. Some of them may lead to darshana avaraniya karma. Some of them may lead to jnana avaraniya karma. Some of them may lead to mohaniya karma. Some of them may lead to ghatiya karma. That is, obstacles are placed. You want to You want to, for example, do something in ULT, but your past karma does not immediately allow. There is a Ghatiya karma. It puts obstacles in the way for you to do things. Like this, analyze, the smallest scrutiny, nothing is left out from his mind. Everything is analyzed, right? And not only this, severity of action, right? We'll see how much we can cover. Severity of action is, small example is, you can write something in stone. You can write something on earth. You can write something on dust. You can write the same thing on water. The duration for which what you have written is retained on these substances are different. What you write in water goes away. Still, it creates ripples. What you write in dust remains longer than water, but you can blow it, and then what you etch on earth longer, what you etch in stone is far more. So your kashayas, your anger, your passion, and your pride, and your moha, and maya, these things can be written so strongly in you such that it is on either stone or on earth or on dust or on water. So what kind of karma you have created, that kind of being you have become. Right? And how do you overcome it? Do its opposite. You have etched something. You want to remove it. Scratch it. Remove it. Etch something else. Then you can transform your nature. What power is there who can influence you? No other power in you. There is no other power in the universe. You are Purusharthavada is the supreme place in the philosophy. And you can manipulate karma. Karma not in the sense of you manipulate the universal law. Karma in the sense of your karmic store that you have. With knowledge, the Jina says, you can manipulate it in certain manners. What those certain manners are, we will see. And we will see how some of the aphorisms on karma gets illustrated here. When you act, the effect that it has to produce, a small portion of that action is nikachana, which is invariable. A large portion is still blank pages. Blank pages. Nidhatta. Flexible, right? You cannot do something wrong and expect something good. That cannot happen because it's nikachana aspect, it's inflexible aspect, its core, its prakritic nature is something bad. But you can, with power, decide when it will mature. You can, with power, decide where it will mature. You can, with power of your will, decide to generate counteracting causes such that the eventual effect, when both these causes mature, will counterbalance themselves. Large part of free will is always there with the jiva. Though some great heinous crime has been committed, still you have the power to liberate yourself at any moment. I mean, not the next moment you will get liberated, but you can begin your journey with no force stopping you. Neither bhagya, nor niyati, nor karma will prevent you from doing anything, right? Look at their analysis in this regard, right? 8 modifications. There's something called a samkramana, transformation. That is, one type of karma you can transform into another kind. Judge says in his article that some of our higher powers and reservoir of energy, it is possible that you focus your life so much on your body and sensual pleasures that the power which has actually to go and enrich your inner being flows down, sankramanam, transforms, because you have lit up a fire below in the body, gets exhausted on the physical plane. What a waste. They call it Sankramanam, right? And then there is this also the story of the two brothers and the astrologer, to explain the Sankramanam and the power that the individual has over his own karma, right? So astrologer comes, he finds two brothers. He says to the elder brother, within a fortnight, you will be hanged. To the other brother, younger, he says, within the same fortnight, you will become the king. So then both of them are, their minds change because of the prophecy that they have heard. The elder one begins to generate that kind of effort, shrama, uses his purushartha, will, and generates such kind of karma that at the end of fortnight, he won't be hanged, but a sharp piercing object pierces him and he feels intense pain. So the karma which was actually supposed to put him to in the gallows gets transformed because of the balancing effect that he generated. Now the younger one, he becomes careless. Oh, I'm going to become the king. Who is going to stop me? And then he gives up all his practices, and then he becomes a different kind of person. And then eventually, when the fortnight is just about to end, he stumbles upon something and finds a small pot of gold. And then both of them come to the astrologer and says, what is this? I am not dead and he didn't become king. He says, no, that was supposed to happen. That was the niyati, bhagya. But then your purushartha was such that you have generated causes which, due to sankramanam, has brought about this kind of effect. Right? So nothing is etched in permanent dravya. Everything can be changed if only you put your heart and soul to it and you can achieve it. You know, that kind of self-confidence is the message of the Mahavira, right? And then two, three other things and we will stop. Look at this. Udirana, premature operation. You take a vow, then karma cascades down, right? One set of karma stops and another set of karma begins. You take a vow, right? Udirana is premature operation. You can make certain karma operate prematurely. Upashamana, one set of karma which is acting, you can, with knowledge and power, stop it and subside it. You cannot erase it. It will come back. But you can subside it temporarily. And Udvartana, augmentation, or Apavartana, diminution. Udvartana is you have some tendency, you give in to the tendency, and through Kashaya you impress upon yourself the same thing again and again. You're augmenting that karma. Or you can decide that I will become a better person. And then you begin to generate things which are of opposite nature. Then you are diminishing the final result that is going to take place, right? So Purusharthavada is very, very central to Jain philosophy. Unfortunately, not much spoken of, but it's very evident. Purusharthavada is a cornerstone of there. And this diminution and augmentation, right? We find it in so many things. We have a certain relationship with somebody which is inimical, unfriendly, and constantly causing troubles to one another. That relationship is a result of karma. Now you can augment it, augment enmity such that you become more and more inimical to one another going ahead and cause mutual destruction, or you can diminish it and produce better causes. Even the other person's mind is going to get affected by your effort, purushartha, right? Ingratitude or gratitude towards one's life, opportunities in life. You get knowledge from the great lords of light. Now, if you don't pay attention to it, right? You got that knowledge from them, the opportunity to come in touch with that esoteric philosophy is one kind of karma. but you don't pay attention to it. You have diminished it. There's some kramanam, transformation that takes place, and that leads to darshana avarniya karma. Next life, the opportunity will not be easy. You have to struggle, go through a lot of pain. So in this way, you can, other opportunities, wealth, friendship, trust, good relationships that we have, if we augment it, it's going to become richer and richer and better future. Upward spiral. Or you can give in to your kashayas, lower passions, and unfortunately turn a bad page and then make a very bad future for yourself. Who is going to stop you? There's no power in the universe which is going to stop you. There's no such power identified at all by Tirthankaras. Right? So the masters say that in the master's letter, I'm reading two quotes. Your past actions, he's speaking of past act, they cannot be obliterated. They cannot be obliterated. They are indelibly stamped upon the record of karma, and neither tears nor repentance can blot the page. Right? But you have the power to more than redeem and balance them by your future acts. This is explained, we find, in the Samkramana and the various 8 transformations that can take place at karma. This is another angle that the master gives in his letter. I read this. Though you shed oceans of tears and grovel in the dust, you have done some mistake. Ocean of tears, repentance, grovel in the dust. This will not move a hair's breadth, the balance of justice. All that will not help you. If you would recover the lost ground, do two things. Make the amplest, most complete reparation, firstly. And secondly, to the good of mankind, devote your energies. Try to fill each day's measure with pure thoughts, wise words, kindly deeds. In this way, there is indelibly something, inflexible something, but large amount is unwritten pages of your future is there. Have hope. Use your knowledge. Use your will. Write those pages with glorious, glorious stories. Who stops you? Nothing that can stop you. That's the message of Mahavira. Self-reliance, self-saviorship. And the motto of Jainas is Parasparo Upagraho Jivanam. All beings exist through mutual support and dependence, right? Which means your moral character has effect on others' moral being. If others are morally bad, you have a say in it. It's because of your nature also that they are like that. You change yourself, you change the society. What a great message of hope. Right? And particular principles about jnana and all that. And beautiful, thankfully I didn't have to read the Prakrit verses, but there is this one verse which says, Pattamam nanam tavodaya, that we were discussing in the morning. Pratama jnanam, then daya, compassion. If you try to take up works of charity, thinking ahimsa and you will do something good or philanthropic work, without knowledge, there are many stories how knowledge leads, actions with good motives, good intention, without knowledge lead to bad results. So Jains emphasize, Jains means not the Jains, but the Jainas, the Jinas, emphasize a lot upon how you keep your mind, what is there happening on the mind. This is something very important in Jain system, where it is in the deepest thing, the mind play, that you have to make corrections. Samyak darshana, samyak jnana, then samyak charitra. You cannot begin by changing your character, charitra, without first addressing the root central cause of samyak darshana and samyak charitra, right? And with all these analysis of Charitra, Darshana, Karma and various things, it all gets focused intensely. And, you know, on one central point, it comes to Samyak Charitra, right? It comes and culminates in that very pinnacle of all their metaphysical and philosophical disquisitions, that it comes and leads to your Charitra. Your, what you are, your conduct on the plane of mind, speech and action is central. You cannot merely have knowledge and not transform yourself. That's not knowledge at all for them, right? And if in Samyak Charitra, if you have to speak of one central virtue, it is Ahimsa. It is Ahimsa, right? All their darshana leads to jnana. All their jnana leads to Charitra. All the Charitra leads to the five virtues. All the five virtues are centered upon Ahimsa. So it is like the one, you see a cone shape. The point is Ahimsa, and the whole philosophy is kind of built on that. Or the whole philosophy, like a seed, rests upon Ahimsa, right? And in Ahimsa, there are beautiful verses which says, Jiva Vaho, Appa Vaho, which means to injure any jiva is to injure oneself. It's not only injury, Ahimsa. This applies to Asteya Aparigraha also. In other words, if you cheat others, you know, we know of businessmen, unscrupulous, very philanthropic in terms of the Jain, but many of them unscrupulous. They must apply this. You are cheating others. You are not cheating others, you are cheating yourself. You are not lying others, lying to others. You are lying to yourself. You are not harming others, you are harming yourself. So, jiva vaho, appa vaho, jiva daya ho di appano ho daya. Daya to others, daya to oneself. You take care of others' interests, your clients' interests, your business interests will be taken care of. You take care of others' wealth and property and don't impinge upon it. Your wealth and property will be safeguarded. What you do to others happens to you because there is no distinction. So it kind of comes and focuses on your character and how you deal with others. The whole metaphysical structure, philosophical structure is built to explain the science behind why you have to do. So we have to stop here.